Next case is Optic Cat v. Polaris Industries, 2018-1850. Counsel, would you pronounce your name for us, please?
Sure. Neil McLeod.
McLeod, right. Good. When you're ready.
Neil McLeod representing Appellant Articat. May it please the Court. The Board's decision in the IPR is erroneous and should be reversed for four fundamental reasons. First, the Court found that the Rondo 917 patent is prior art to the Articat patent, the Ole Tweet patent, under a legally flawed analysis of this Court's decision in dynamic drinkware. Second, the Board used a claim construction that...
You're finding that dynamic drink water said every claim?
Yes, we are, Your Honor.
Where is that in the opinion?
It's all over Section 2 of the dynamic drinkware opinion, which is the part of the opinion, the last two pages of the opinion, that deals specifically with this issue. It's recited as the claims, and it's talking about comparing the alleged prior art to the provisional. Four times it says the claims, twice in italics.
What was the cite that you gave Judge Lurie on the opinion? The drink.
It's
drink
Section one? 2 of the opinion.
Section 2.
It's the last two pages of the opinion.
But if we disagree with you, Rondo is a pretty good reference.
Rondo is a reference by Articat's competitor, Bombardier.
Well, competitor or not, it's pretty effective. It talks about a rearward seat and the main portion, and then the rearward portion being elevated relative to the main portion. That's pretty much your invention.
It's different in the seating arrangements. First of all, it's got the same seat. It doesn't have the claimed separate seats where you have a driver's seat and...
Well, one of your claims, claim one, doesn't have a separate seat either, as I recall.
It's got separate seating positions. Claim nine certainly does have the two.
Claim nine does, yes.
And Rondo, if you look at it, Rondo is closer to the prior art that was overcome in the patent office, the Davis reference. Rondo is not about what the Articat patent is, which is two separate seats, and one is substantially, the passenger seat is substantially above the driver's seat. Rondo doesn't have that.
Can I ask you this question? As I recall, you don't challenge the proposition that the Rondo provisional teaches all of the claim limitations, including those of the dependent claims here, and indeed the dependent claims of Rondo itself.
Are you talking about comparison of the provisional of Rondo to the Articat claims?
I tried to do both. Let's start with the comparison of the provisional to the Arctic Cat claims. You don't dispute that, right?
I believe we do, first of all.
Except for this, you know, two-seat business. I mean, that is, putting aside the dispute about the two seats and any more than what's in Rondo itself.
The two-seat limitation and also the substantially above limitation.
Okay, but that's the same as between Rondo and the provisional.
That I'm not sure of exactly. What I do think is that they never got Rondo 917 to be prior art because they failed the dynamic.
Well, here's what I guess I'm trying to get at a legal question, which I guess is becoming less and less significant because of the replacement of these provisions in the AIA. Your contention is that in order for Rondo to have a priority based on the filing date of the provisional, every single claim in Rondo, 1 through 9, need to be supported in the provisional.
That is our position.
Right. And the board said, we're only going to look at claim 1, the only independent claim, not 2 through 9, which are some dependent claims, and that one is supported, and that's enough. And you disagree with that.
We disagree.
So here's what I'm trying to figure out. Have you shown, even if the board was legally incorrect, that legal error was prejudicial? And it seems to me, which you have to do, I think, under the APA, under 706, which says you have to take account of the rule of prejudicial error, which means you need to show it wasn't harmless. And it seems to me, in order for you to show that if that was error, it was prejudicial, you need to show that the provisional reasonably might not support claims 2 through 9. And I don't see that you've shown that.
2 through 9 of Rondo.
This whole debate is about whether 1 is enough or all 1 through 9 had to be supported by the provisional.
I think we did. We showed, I think, claim 1 of Rondo is not supported by the provisional. It's not in our appellate brief, but we did challenge those that finding by the board.
How did you challenge it if it's not in your brief?
In our brief, we're just challenging the what I think is a straightforward dynamic drinkware test. All claims have to be supported in the provisional. And it's a threshold test, the way I read it. You can't even begin to consider.
Do you have authority other than the drinkware case to support that?
Do I have language in the drinkware case?
No, is there another case? Do you have authority other than the drinkware case?
I've looked and I don't find any other cases that clarify, change, or in any way modify the drinkware case. So again, I see it as a threshold test. You can't even begin to talk about provisional applications and what's disclosed in those until you meet this drinkware test. The petitioner didn't do it. Admittedly didn't do it. Claim 1 is the only one they analyzed. They read drinkware. They read the term the claims. They even cited it in their petition. They strategically chose not to map all the claims of the Rondo onto the provisional. And they shouldn't be rewarded.
I'm sorry. How do we know that they strategically chose that? Just that's what they did?
Because I think they did it, maybe I should retract the word strategically. They did it knowing that dynamic drinkware says the claims, and they didn't do it. And I don't think they should be rewarded for that. They failed the test, and Rondo 917 is not prior art in this case, based on dynamic drinkware.
Suppose that Rondo had 100 claims. Would they be required to chart all those claims?
It sounds like a ton of work. Most
it would be. That's the point. I mean, it would be an incredible burden, wouldn't it?
Most, few patents have 100 claims. Most have 20, 10, less than 20. The flip side of that, Your Honor, is if there were half a dozen independent claims, you could pick and choose strategically, this is the broadest one, this is the easy one to support, and then do what I think they're doing and what other patent challengers might do is try to bootstrap the non-prior art. back to the filing date of the provisional unfairly.
But the real point is, if the provisional discloses the invention, and nothing shows the invention more than the broadest claim one.
I'm not sure I'm following.
And if that's satisfied, then why isn't that an effective reference as of the provisional's filing date?
That would only be part of the analysis. You'd only be, it's not what Drinkor says, first of all. The Drinkor test, I think, is, again, a threshold test that...
But I'm talking about the real meaning of these provisions, that whether Rondo gets the benefit as a reference of its provisional date depends upon whether Rondo's provisional discloses the invention. And I'm saying claim one of Rondo, the broadest claim, is the invention.
We don't know that. You're almost comparing claim one of Rondo to the claims of the AutoCAD patent.
I haven't mentioned AutoCAD.
Right. I think you're asking me. The question is suggesting to me what I think Polaris is doing. They're trying to bootstrap this entire Rondo 917 patent off, get an earlier filing date for it, based on just an analysis of one claim, whereas Drinkware says all of them. Drinkware is, I think, an attempt to vet the entire provisional application.
Is the word all in the Drinkwater opinion? What does it say?
It says the claims. The claims I take to mean. I think the only reasonable reading of it is all the claims.
Do you know, was there a disputed issue in Drinkware and was there an Amgen subsequent follow-on case or something about whether all versus one?
I don't think in Drinkware the dispute was all versus one. It was none versus all.
Right. So that means maybe the crucial distinction that you're making here wasn't really the focus of anybody's attention, and so.
The court, I think, was pretty clear in using the words "the claims" four times and twice italicized. I don't think the court was glossing over any kind of distinction there. It's the claims. One of the other errors the court made was in the claim construction. The court's claim construction that they used vitiates or essentially erases the two critical claim limitations, that is substantially above and significantly above, and that's in regard to the placement of the passenger seat versus the driver's seat. The board's construction was any positioning of the passenger seat with respect to the driver's seat is met, any positioning by the prior art. It's erroneous on its face, especially in light of the prosecution history.
Can you clarify for something? Didn't the board say in its institution decision, not just the final written decision, but also in the institution decision, that this idea, I don't remember the exact words, any even minimal height difference would satisfy the claim?
They did.
And did you, in your patent owner response, say that is incorrect?
I believe we did. The board said we are adopting AutoCAD's construction.
In the institution decision.
Right.
And explained that what it thought it was adopting covered any. Did you, in the patent owner response, say, by the way, this claim construction that you set out in the institution decision is incorrect because it really should not have included this any old difference will do?
I know we did to the extent that we challenged their application of it, certainly, because any positioning above is certainly not the same as substantially above. I mean, it's a flawed construction on its face. And I believe we challenged it maybe in a roundabout way when they applied it, but we did challenge it.
Counsel, shall we save the remainder of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Morton.
Morning. May it please the court. The board canceled each claim of the 864 patent on at least two and sometimes three grounds. And that outcome was driven by two things. First, another inventor, Rondeau, was first to invent. He was first to the patent office with the exact same concept. And second, the invention is nothing more than adding a motorcycle passenger seat to an ATV. Articat's conception documents literally say, quote, "We added a two-passenger motorcycle seat."
But your opposing counsel says Rondeau isn't effective prior art.
So let me jump to that. One of the three big things to discuss today, I think, is certainly the dynamic drinkware decision. I think that they're just simply incorrect in how they're trying to use and read that decision. So the decision turns on Section 119E and its discussion of provisions. And what it says in 119E is that if you have an application for an invention, singular, then there's a written description requirement for the provisional. You have to show description of an invention or that invention in order to receive the date of the provisional. And that's all it says. There's no mention of all claims. It simply is their support for an invention.
But each claim is theoretically a separate invention, right? So why doesn't it mean all the claims?
Well, again, this, starting with the statute says
the invention.
An invention, singular. In dynamic drinkware, that actually quotes an earlier case, the new Railhead decision, and cites the test completely correctly at that point in the decision. It says, in other words, a specification of the provisional must contain a written description of the invention. And it repeats the invention again in that quote of the earlier new Railhead decision.
But why doesn't this language, against the background of the principle Judge Lurie mentioned, namely, we've repeatedly said, every claim defines a distinct invention. Why doesn't this language of 119 call for something like a claim by claim priority determination?
I give three reasons, Your Honor. I mean, first, if we go back to general principles.
They didn't argue that. Put that aside.
Just going back to general principles, the general principle is whoever was first to invent is first to invent. And somebody shouldn't get a patent that comes along later. That goes back to the Supreme Court Milburn decision.
Right, but that's a claim-by-claim determination.
That was saying the original filing should count as prior art, notwithstanding delays in the patent office until the patent gets issued. So that's basic principles. 119E simply adds for provisionals this requirement for an invention, again, singular. Then what happened, and if you look at the earlier cases, New Railhead, and the Giacomini case that's cited in our briefs, they're looking at just one claim. I mean, those courts, those parties understood an invention to be one claim. What happened in dynamic drinkware...
Particularly the other claims are dependent claims and encompassed by...
I agree with that part, certainly. Claim one is the invention in Rondeau. What happened in dynamic drinkware was that the petitioner was doing it completely wrong. They just assumed the provisional was all prior art and compared that to the challenged claims. They never made any attempt to compare it to the non-provisional prior art claims, or one claim or all claims or anything. So the court in dynamic drinkware, when it says claims plural, is simply saying, no, you have to compare the provisional to the claims.
Right.
And the
I mean, for what it's worth, I don't have any doubt, actually, that dynamic drinkware does not settle this question. The much harder question for me is, since we don't have a direct precedent settling it, what should be the correct answer?
Certainly, Your Honor. And for that, I mean, I can only go back again to the statute, which says an invention singular. The earlier New Railhead decision was looking at one claim and gives the same test quoted by dynamic drinkware, which is the invention singular. And so I think that's the correct answer. In addition, in this particular case, it's very similar to the Giacomini case, where Articat has not challenged the analysis in any way. All they have is this point, but when you look at our application of Claim 1 of the non-provisional Rondeau patent to the provisional, there is no argument below or on appeal that our analysis was incorrect. So any argument on that is waived, and that's the same situation that was present in the Giacomini case.
Do we have a... I tried to suggest in my questioning to your opposite number an issue about whether even if the board were wrong, maybe they haven't in this court shown prejudice, that is, which would require them to identify something about Rondo claims 2 through 9 that might not be supported by the provisional. Without that, there's no prejudice from even a, by assumption, erroneous focus only on claim 1. What do you make of that?
I guess I would agree with that. And factually, there is not any suggestion anywhere in the record below or on appeal that there's anything missing. It's just not there. So, you know, we made our showing, the board adopted it, and there's really no response to that other than this issue of...
Are you aware of the Supreme Court's request for the views of the Solicitor General in the Ariosa case that is pending in the Supreme Court about whether a provisional counts as prior art even when there are no claims in the, you know, the non-provisional application that is supported? It's a Milburn case. It quite specifically questions Wertheim. Does that have some bearing on what we have to decide here?
Not really, Your Honor, because we showed one claim, right? We don't have that situation where there's no claims. We took claim one and applied it directly to the provisional. There's no dispute about that. When we applied it to the challenged claims, we double-sided in the utility application and the provisional for every point, and there's no challenge on that analysis either.
Aside from Rondo, aren't the claims distinctive in reciting significantly and substantially higher?
Sure, let me go to that issue. So the easiest path on that clearly is waiver, because Articat never proposed any different construction below and never disputed that Rondo has a substantially raised seat in the record below. They do on appeal, but it's not. It's never was challenged below. So what happened, and I think we maybe covered this earlier, Articat proposed a construction in its preliminary response of not substantially on the same level as the driver's seating position, such that the passenger has a better view of the oncoming terrain. There's no distinction in that proposal between raised and substantially raised. They just said not substantially on the same level. The board adopted that construction during the trial. Polaris agreed, fine, that's the construction. Articat never proposed a different construction, and the final written decision applies that construction. There's no different construction proposed on appeal. So there is no claim construction issue there. That issue is waived. What also happened is the board did give guidance as to what that means to the parties at institution, explaining that under Articat's construction, any amount of a raised seat, however minimal, visibly or otherwise, will meet the construction, and invited Articat to provide testimony, evidence, anything showing any other distinction or difference that there might be. And Articat did not do that. They didn't propose anything different or that interpretation was wrong, given the words of their construction. So those arguments are waived. Again, they never disputed that Rondo has a substantially raised seat. It does, and our evidence shows that. For the other grounds, the Grindy grounds, they did try to say that the Grindy passenger seat was not substantially on the same level. They said it was on the same level, excuse me. But then their expert admitted in deposition that it's raised, that the Grindy seat is raised, and it would meet the construction as proposed by Articat. So we've shown substantial evidence on those points of a seat that meets Articat's construction.
Is there an issue about relying on Thompson here?
Yes. Let me go to the Thompson issue, Your Honor. So, Thompson, there's no underlying substance to this argument. We did not include Thompson in the petition grounds, and Thompson is not relied upon for any claim element in the final written decision. And there's no factual dispute that the prior art that is relied upon in the petition and the final written decision has all of the various handle elements that were also discussed in Thompson. So why are we even talking about it? We cited it as knowledge of one of skill in the art because it talks about handle limitations on a snowmobile, an Articat snowmobile, and it says various handholds are available within the knowledge of one of skill. And the board made more of it in the institution decision. Now there's three sets of grounds. For the Rondeau grounds, the board cited Thompson as backup, quote, backup, for the limitations about the handles extending upwardly from the rack main deck. But Articat never disputed below or on appeal that that element is present in Rondeau. We don't need Thompson. Thompson's irrelevant. Another set of grounds are Grindy plus the cycle article, which is a motorcycle prior art. Thompson has never been a part of those grounds at any point, and so Thompson is irrelevant to affirmance on those grounds, which cancel all the claims. And the final set of grounds is Grindy plus Fecto, which is adding a snowmobile passenger seat and the handle limitations. There, the board had added Thompson to show the handles above the level of the driver's seat. But in the final written decision, they said without Thompson as prior art, we failed to meet our burden on claims 1 through 8. So we lost on that point in the final written decision. And again, Thompson is irrelevant to affirmance on the grounds that we won on. So the board was very exacting on those issues, and Thompson is simply irrelevant to the legal and factual findings of the board. So in conclusion, you know, the board's, I'll cede my remaining time unless there are more questions. The board's decision is very detailed. The only substantive challenge on appeal really is substantially raised, which I've said, you know, we've met substantial evidence standard. So we'd ask for affirmance in all respects.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McLeod has a little rebuttal time, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just some quick points on what was raised. The court raised the, on the dynamic drinkware issue, raised Section 119 and Section 112. Those are in the dynamic drinkware decision, but they're just building blocks. They're supporting, they're standing for the, you know, us in the patent world know is a rather unremarkable principle that every claim must find support. That's all they're saying. They're not saying, they're not modifying drinkware in any way, or they don't suggest a reading of drinkware in any way that says one claim is enough to pass this threshold test that I believe drinkware sets up for us to vet prior art. On the claim construction issue, that the board purported to adopt Articat's claim construction, which is supportable, which is Articat's claim construction is supportable and meaningful. They did not use that construction. They simply did not. They use a construction that says basically any positioning above the driver's seat is enough to pass that. And it's clearly erroneous. It's erroneous under Phillips, certainly, and it's erroneous under the broadest reasonable interpretation standard. Equating anything above to substantially above is erroneous on its face, I'd suggest. The Thompson issue that was raised at the end, here's our point. Thompson, by counsel's own admission, is not in the grounds in their petition. It's not listed. They barely mention it in the body of their petition. You get to the institution decision, and suddenly five grounds have Thompson listed as a reference. Five separate grounds that weren't even in the petition. Articat successfully overcame the Thompson reference. That should be the end of the story for the five grounds listing Thompson in the institution decision. But it isn't. You get to the final written decision, those same grounds are there, just removing the Thompson reference. It's a shifting target, and the petition, which is supposed to guide these proceedings, is shifted. It's not the same as the institution decision or the final written decision. It's not following the guideline of the petition.
To what extent did the institution decision rely on Thompson? Wasn't it just a backup?
Well, the court, I think, chastised excuse me, the board chastised petitioner for attempting to use it as backup and then used it actually in the grounds, though. They list five grounds in the institution decision that specifically recite Thompson with other references for an obviousness analysis.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you.